I'm pleased to be joined today by John Carr, our Washington Front columnist, talking just the day before Thanksgiving about Pope Francis's first apostolic exhortation. Welcome, John Carr.
Glad to be with you, Tim. Happy Thanksgiving.
To you as well. Now, Pope is keeping us busy here before the holiday weekend. Maybe you can talk about, you've written a lot about Francis, you've held some events at Georgetown on Francis. What was your first impression of this document?
Well, it felt like an early Christmas gift to me when I was able to read it. I was in meetings in the morning and I only got snippets and sort of the headlines, and it sounded a little bit like the Greatest Hits album from the first 6 months of Pope Francis, because it lifted up some of the themes that he has been addressing on a regular basis. But last night I had a chance to sit down and read the whole thing, and that's really wrong. This is not a series of homilies. This is an integrated, coherent call to faith that will affirm us in lots of ways, that will challenge us in more ways, and that charts a path not only for Pope Francis, but for the whole church. Beginning with the first word, the joy of the gospel, to the last sentence about Mary as a model, this is a holy, happy pastor, teacher that is telling us to have confidence in what we believe and to do better every day in carrying it out.
Now, you've written a lot for us about how Pope Francis makes all of us uncomfortable, you know, both people on the left and the right. It seems like he's doing the same here. He's challenging all of us.
He really is, and in very direct language. I mean, he says there's no place for sourpusses or gossips or for people who just turn the faith into whatever the currents of the moment is. While much of the language is very down to earth, at one point he talks about Gnosticism and Pelagianism, and you got to keep going. He warns us against relativizing the faith and turning it in on ourselves. And then he also very explicitly says, let's not pretend to go back to the good old days. That's not the way of the church. That's not the way of faith. The good old days might not have been as good as they seemed. And in any case, we need to move forward with confidence, with joy, with mercy, and with a particular concern for the weak and the vulnerable and the poor.
Yes, I mean, a lot of people have focused in the reporting on this, on the economic message. Now, he has said, as you said, some of this along the way, but this seems to be a really kind of a stronger, coherent call to really take solidarity with the poor.
Well, today's front page headline in the Post is Pope decries trickle-down economics. And that's a little shorthand, although he actually does. He even uses the word trickle-down economics. The focus on the poor and on economic justice is not a couple paragraphs stuck into the document. It's actually woven through. It appears in two sections at great length. And it moves in two directions. One is ecclesially. What is the relationship between the church and the poor? And he goes back to one of his opening comments as Holy Father. I want a church of the poor and for the poor. And the test of the church is whether we in fact welcome, support, and listen to the poor and vulnerable in our midst, and whether we in fact preach the good news to them. And then externally, he looks at the economy, he looks at politics from the bottom up. How does this touch the weakest in our midst? And frankly, he doesn't say things that are different in character than what Pope Benedict said or Pope John Paul II said, but there is a passion and a personal touch to it. This is a pastor whose shoes have been in the slums, whose hands have been touching the poor directly. And so he calls the church to encounter, and every Christian to encounter the poor. And then he says, let's look at economic life not for the wealth it creates for the few, but for the misery it offers for those left behind. And he uses very strong words, tyranny, idolatry. It's a real challenge, and you need to remember, early in his pastoral life, Pope Francis took on the Marxist elements of liberation theology, but he feels very comfortable taking on the excesses and the dangers of a market that is not unchecked by a concern for human dignity.
Well, that's interesting. We've talked about that here, how his perspective certainly seems informed by some elements of liberation theology, but he's not using that language. So
there are some things he settles and other things he doesn't. I mean, some people question whether the option for the poor is really a part of Catholic doctrine. He settles that question. It's not only part of Catholic doctrine, it's at the core of who we are. Whether abortion is up for grabs, our opposition. And he makes very clear this is not some conservative leftover from sexual morality. This is at the core of the church's commitment to human life and dignity. And he explicitly says this is not a conservative action by the church. He says there is nothing progressive about killing the unborn. And then he thinks that makes very clear that the sacraments, particularly communion, are not to be used as a reward for good behavior, but rather help for those who are weak and vulnerable. He sees the sacraments as a source of grace and strength and support, not a reward for good behavior. And that ought to settle some things here, but there are some matters he leaves really open. One is, he talks about the conversion of the papacy. And that's really his work, and he doesn't spell out where it's headed, except that he's clearly more open to the contributions of bishops' conferences. He calls for a sound decentralization. And one of the most interesting things about the document are the footnotes, which in the second half of the exhortation are drawn primarily from the statements of bishops' conferences around the world, including our own United States. And then a major issue, having reaffirmed the church's teaching on ordination, he says that we simply have to do better in terms of accepting, using, recognizing, and rewarding the gifts, the responsibilities and the roles of women. So he shuts some doors and opens some others.
Now, what do you think, something you think about as our Washington Front correspondent, the political implications are this for, you know, Catholics in the public square in this country?
I don't know what the Northeast is like, but we had a steady rain yesterday. And this is more like a thunderstorm. you know, there were some bolts of lightning going down to those who ignore, frankly, the priority for the poor. In many ways, the most countercultural thing about Francis is not that he defends the church's teaching on human life or that he presses for alternatives to war, both of which are countercultural in Washington, but that he says we have to place the poor first in public life. He even says, I beg for more politicians who know the hurts of the poor and who will work to provide jobs for dignity, health care for decency, and education for children. Those are not Washington's priorities for the most part. And there are a lot of Catholics in Washington who point to their faith as a part of who they are, and they need to listen to Francis.
Now, you also said about what the implications are for bishop conferences and their role in the larger church. Bishop McElroy, Robert McElroy, wrote an article for us just a month ago where he laid out a vision for the American church drawing on Francis, and it seems to be very much in keeping with what Francis is saying here in terms of our priorities need to be on the poor and also the unborn. Do you see...
Bishop McElroy's piece was a masterpiece. He's a really smart, thoughtful leader in our church. And he's making a point that is as old as the prophets and as clear as Matthew 25. This is not new for us. And what Francis does is he says it perhaps more boldly, perhaps with greater passion and more urgency, but this is at the heart of who we are, and we ignore it at our peril.
Now, you have an event coming up on Monday, maybe you can speak about briefly to end. This is part of, maybe you can introduce your center at Georgetown.
Well, we are building an initiative on Catholic social thought and public life at Georgetown, and the timing could not be better. I mean, Francis creates incredible momentum and a unique moment for our work. The first session we had was on the Francis factor in public life, which drew a standing room only crowd and a lot of attention. On Monday night, the Monday after Thanksgiving, we're focusing on Francis and the poor, the Pope and the poor. And I thought we were all set. I was also working on a column. And then the exhortation came over the wire. And we sent a note to our panelists that said, hold the presses. You need to read this. So we will have a very timely and a very unique opportunity to discuss what Francis is calling us to. Cardinal Theodore McCarrick is going to open. And then the discussion includes Bishop Blair, who has been the leader of the Bishops' Conference, Mike Gerson, who is a columnist for the Washington Post and a leader of the Bush administration, E.J. Dionne, also a columnist for the Post, and Catherine Lopez, who writes for National Review. So we have a cardinal, we have columnists, we have Democrats, we have Republicans, we have liberals, we have conservatives, all united by our Catholic faith, and all trying to figure out what the Holy Father is calling us to do and to be when it comes to standing with the poor. So it should be an interesting meeting. If people are in the Washington area, it's at 7 p.m. at Gaston Hall at Georgetown.
Great, and I'm sure you'll have some online resources we can share with our readers when the time comes.
Sure, it might even make its way into a column, Tim.
Okay, well, we look forward to that, too. Well, John Carr, we want to thank you very much and wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and to all those listening here. America is doing a splendid job. I can say this primarily as an outsider. The interview was just amazing, and now the ongoing coverage of what Francis, how he affirms us, how he challenges us, is really important, and America is among those publications that are doing a splendid job. But frankly, you have an awful lot to work with, so high praise, but Pope Francis gets most of the credit.
Absolutely. We're all riding on his coattails, so we'll look forward to continuing the conversation. Thank you again.
Thanks, Tim.